Good morning and welcome to The Weekender. In this episode, we're going to be giving away a copy of Aeronautica Imperialis.
I love it.
If you want to be in with a chance of winning that, get a comment in on this video on YouTube. But more importantly, come across to ontabletop.com, the place where we call home, the place we want you to call home, the place where we are completely uninterfered and unencumbered by all of the politics and all the other crap that goes on within YouTube and other social media. It's a place we control, so we know you get to see what we want you to see.
We control the horizontal, we control the vertical.
So any comment that's placed on this video and on tabletop.com is worth two. Hey? Mm-hmm. Hey?
Ooh.
Hey?
So, I love that.
Let me introduce everybody. I am Warren from the On Tabletop team. And this morning, I am joined by my baldy buddy, Justin.
Hello.
I'm joined by the great Sasquatch in the clouds. My man, it's got to be the Jerry. We're joined by the bearded seer, the man who wants to be a badger. And in many ways, so is gradually making it. It is, of course, Ben. And then for a little change of pace this morning, we've brought in the sprightly one. We've brought in the one with the energy, the little coiled spring, the handsomest dude in the whole of On Tabletop.
Oh,
how? True.
It is true, Justin. The rest of us are all butt ugly, man.
No, that's not true. As soon as he came in, I was just there going, I'm not the pretty one anymore.
Where are you at?
It is, of course, it's Ryan.
Good morning. Good morning.
Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thank you very much.
It's going to be a pleasure to have you and all your doctorates here with us.
Brilliant.
To keep us around.
I know at least one thing that we're talking about today.
So yay.
I'm looking forward to it.
This is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, to kick off, we've got three announcements. Okay. 16th of September is the launch of the Infinity Online Global Campaign. Prepare yourselves for that. You're going into space.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be super fantastic, right?
Next up, on October 5th, we have the Bolt Action Korea event, which is taking place here.
This is not a picture center. From the event, because the event is in our future.
Yes, the event is in the future. The event hasn't happened yet.
Yes.
Apologies, we weren't able to bring you information much quicker than this. We've been trying to gauge just how many spaces we can actually pull together for this, because the event is quite tricky to do. There's a lot of work in it. It's been a hard one for us to try and get our heads around.
Important note, it's free.
Yes, it's a free event. We have 10
free with ticket.
We get free with a ticket.
Ah.
Okay. We have 10 spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So 10 of you can join us for this event, and it takes place on Saturday, October 5th between 11 a.m. and 10 p.m.
Mm.
And you're going to be able to come and play Bolt Action Korea. We're going to be building up some themed tables. We have some ideas now on how we're going to accomplish that. You bring your own armies, you play out some games, and we're going to have some special swag to give away, like Bolt Action Dice and the Korea medals and things like that. For anybody that picks up a free ticket, you're very welcome to join us in the member suite on Friday night. And we will also open on the Sunday for some open gaming for anybody that has arrived. We'll probably put that out to our other local members and stuff as well. It will be open that Sunday. Just so as if you've come this way, this length for the event, you can have a full weekend of various gaming.
Yay.
Just need 1,000 points, kids.
Is that what they need, 1,000 points of Bolt Action?
Yeah. So the rough idea is the Saturday will be a Bolt Action tournament. First game, 750 points and a 9 dice limit. And then the next three games will be 1,000 points with a 12 dice limit. So once you've got your ticket, We'll give it a little pack out to you because there'll be set scenarios as well.
Yeah.
So I'm still tweaking things at the moment because I don't want the set scenarios to be so set that people know what's coming in advance. So maybe set per game with the dice roll. So there may be two options or three options for each game. And then it'll be a standard sort of tournament setup with a Swiss matchup after the first. But I know we do have a couple of locals who want to come. So I may even end up seeding pots. So I try and keep people who play together separated for the first game at least.
Yeah.
And then after the fact, we start to break down from there. But, you know, mm-hmm. Page money takes your chances.
Tickets. We'll be putting the link to the tickets in tomorrow morning's XLBS show. Cult of Games members are going to get first crack at the tickets. If we've anything left from the 10, we will post them on the front page. But if it's about 5 or 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, the link to the tickets will go live in the post on tabletop.com for the XLBS show. Mm-hmm. We only have 10 and they are free. So
just get yourself here with your army. I'm prepared to probably kick Lloyd's ass maybe if he gets his Koreans together.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. So we're looking forward to that. And again, sincere apologies. We haven't been able to bring information on that sooner. It's the first kind of event of this type that we have run. And it was... Because it's a one-day event, it's not something that we have been used to. It's not a boot camp. It's not a hobby weekend. It's something very different. And we've been trying to work out how we go about doing it and doing it to the best of our ability. So it's just taken a bit of working out to try and understand that. But if we can get the format to work, then there's scope for some interesting one-day kind of things going forward. But we know that a lot of you kind of travel here from further afield. So, you know, we don't want you to come all this way just for one day. You know, so we need to take some thinking around this. Okay, Flames of War. They're doing a live launch today. Battlefront are going to be running a live launch blog. You can find that over at launch.battlefront.co.nz. And they're going to have some how-to videos with modeling, painting, spotlights, army building articles. And it's all related to...
The Germans.
The Germans are coming to D-Day. Mm-hmm. So the D-Day German book is landed. If we can get a glimpse of the guys. We get the Jerry. Is the button working? There it is. There it is.
Germans don't need to come to D-Day. D-Day comes to the Germans. That's how that one goes. So that's the D-Day German book itself. Mm-hmm. And then with that, there's also the unit cards, which are the same breakdown as the book. And then if you want to be frisky, there's the command cards.
How did the command cards work in Flames of War?
Command cards, there's a couple of different things with the command cards. So for example... you can have like an observation Panzer III to use for your artillery spotting. Mm-hmm. But then you can get things like the SDKFZ 250 OP. So that's a half-track observation post instead. So you replace things. So it allows you to tweak in other bits and pieces. But then you can also get things like Lucky, which is 1 point. So 1 point of your 100-point list could be discard this card to reroll one dice.
Oh.
Any dice at any time.
So at what point do you draw these cards? Or
you don't draw these. These are built in. So this is points. So when you build your list, you go, I'm going to have assault gun escorts, which is infantry from Fallschirmjäger rifle platoon.
Can
be mounted on your armor track. So you can spend points to tweak and upgrade and change your list. They're not needed. They're not part of the actual book, but they give you a different flavor and a different way
to
play. So
it's a little bit of like a Star Wars Legion-y kind of thing. Yeah. So you can... So whenever I'm pointing up a list for Flames of War, I could allocate a certain amount of points to buying up some command points or those few points that are always left at the end.
When you've got points left over, you can go...
Fill in the gaps.
Yeah, you can go... Do I finish my 100-point list at 99 points, or do I go for 1 point of lucky? I'm going to have 1 point of lucky, please.
1 point of lucky, absolutely.
Yeah, because you never know.
That's a nice touch. So that's part of the actual the building of the...
So the, at the moment, D-Day, German and American forces have them. The others will have to wait. Unlucky people.
Now, we've had a chance to have a look through the D-Day German book. It's a gorgeous book. You know, it's a, there's some great stuff in it. If you check back a couple of days ago...
Wednesday,
we posted a video where we were we're all kind of involved in the Hobby League, the Flames of War Hobby League at the moment. So we were taking my army, as it currently stands... and working out what I was going to add to it to take it up to just over 100 and something points. To give options. To give me some options to swap some stuff in or out. So definitely go and check that video out. Also, the reason we're doing all of this is that we're going to be launching a massive global D-Day Flames of War campaign later in the year. Okay. I was in a meeting with the guys from Battlefront in New Zealand recently, where we were talking about the mechanics of the campaign and how the campaign's gonna work. Holy smokes! This campaign is gonna be insanely great.
Is it a piece of precision German engineering, much like the Tiger?
Oh no! No,
it doesn't break down.
I am putting this out. I am putting the global Flames of War community on warning here. Right, the guys at Battlefront are pushing the boat out on this campaign, as are we. This could be the single coolest campaign that we have ever run. I mean, it is, it's going to be big. It's going to be epic. It'll tie in with the campaign that you can run in your local stores and your local clubs. And I just, I was getting more and more excited.
Oh, it's been a while since you've done the little hand
the
shimmy.
The little hand shimmy was going, and I was like, oh my God, this is going to be great. So, there's so much stuff I want to tell you. There's so much cool things I want to show you.
Are you NDA'd?
It's not that I'm NDA'd, right?
Okay. Spoilers?
I'm waiting.
Spoilers, it's based around D-Day.
Careful now. I don't want you to know what happened. But what is based around? There's a couple of really, really cool things happening, okay? Mm-hmm. But I'm just waiting to hear back from the guys at Battlefront, if the big boss okays it, right? Because there's just the campaign is magnificent, but there's a couple of things I just need to sort out, because once they're sorted out, this is a campaign that goes to God status.
Oh,
okay. I have never.
That's a hefty statement.
I have never been so motivated to get my Flames of War army together as I am for this campaign. Okay.
Good man.
Whenever we had finished talking about the ins and outs of this campaign, online campaigns are tricky things to run. Okay, but the guys, this will be the third campaign we'll have run with the guys at Battlefront. We've run two World War III campaigns. This is our first World War II campaign. And what they came out with us today, basically they come up with a lot of the mechanics and the rules and stuff, and then we provide the platform and shape the platform and get all the platform and all working. They have got it. And they came on and they were showing me their thoughts on the mechanics and the map. Oh my God, when do you see the map? And I was like, oh, dude, this is just hobby heaven right here. This is just hobby heaven. And then we come up with a couple of additional ideas that, oh, please, Battlefront, come back and say yes on those, because they are going to set the thing on fire.
Were they based around German saucers?
No, oh, no, right, no, 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 no. Yes.
Sorry, maybe.
No, there's no German saucers or anything in it. Now, I'm getting the word out now, right? If you have ever fancied getting involved in a bit of World War II gaming, okay, now's your chance. Come and join us Join myself, Justin, Jerry, Dr. Dave. I'm putting you on notice, man. I'm reaching out to you, Dr. Dave, as well. We're going to get you over here for something soon. But if you've never done it, right, you and a mate get together, right? Come over to store.ontabletop.com. Mm-hmm. Pick up two boxes of Hit the Beach, Flames of War, Hit the Beach. It's
right, no, hang on. Let me double check. We have them in stock.
Yes, I got. Okay. I brought in. Well, as many as we could. So we've about 30 or 40 of them.
Okay, that's right. Just, yeah. You're putting the shout out there. I want to make sure people aren't just going back orders.
Yeah, we've 30 or 40 sitting cool. there. So I believe. So Tom will kick my ass if we don't. But it is by far my favorite gaming starter set ever. Okay, at the moment, it is just on fire. In one box alone, if you price those models individually, there's 140 quids worth of models in there. You get that box, I think from store.ontabletop.com, I think they're 28 quid, right?
28 and shrapnel.
28 and change, okay? If you and a mate get that box, one of those boxes each, and then you take all the German stuff, and give your mate all the American stuff, you've pretty much got what you need for a good size, two good sized armies, and you can participate in the Hobby League, which we're running with Battlefront and over on tabletop.com. If you put in do a project, we have this great little project system where you can kind of record and post photographs and things like that as your project progresses, and you can go in and see other people's projects.
You can see mine. How they're it's doing. Amazing.
So you can go in and look at the project, create a project. There'll be some prizes and things like that for the Hobby League. So you get to do some hobby time, and then at the end of it, you get to compete. Well, I say compete. I would rather say participate.
Participate, yeah.
In this narrative D-Day campaign that is going to be running in the winter. And so if you've ever, if it's ever appealed to you, if you've ever fancied getting into some World War II gaming, now is the time to do it. Just go grab it. Grab a friend. Build the stuff. Believe me, you're unlikely to regret it. It is a lot of fun. The game is great, and with everything it has been organized, now's a good time to jump in, because you've got loads of support, you'll have loads of people all around you. The Hobby League is blowing up. All over the world, the Hobby League is blowing up. Loads and loads of people getting involved in that, and it's great. It's as community spirited a thing as I have felt in a while now. And it's cool.
And if you've questions, ask on tabletop.
Yes. Yeah. Come and let us know. Hop into the forums.
I'll quite happily ask anything apart from Soviets. I'll stab at.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I'd stab a few Soviets, so that's close enough. But I know after the vlog went out for us talking about how we were going to expand your Germans.
Yeah.
Somebody went, yeah, that's great. Any chance you could do the Americans? And to be fair, the Americans came out first, and we kind of glossed over that.
Yeah.
So I've been doing the studio army for the Americans, which, if I've been productive enough, may even appear on Battlefront's website this weekend. See whether or not they allow me. But yeah, so we could grab the studio Americans next week, maybe grab a camera, and we'll do the same thing. Go through what D-Day America is and how you can expand and build your American force as well. So,
things and then, like this. And then we'll do the Brits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've got time for them. February, February 2020.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, we'll do the Brits in February, but we will do the Americans. Yeah.
We can certainly do a primer for the British and the Soviets, but they won't see their own books until next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there you have it, guys. Look, an open invitation to come on board with us. Join in on this. It's a lot of fun, and I've got to say that I've really, really enjoyed the Flames of War Fourth for the late war. It's been great, and I'm a big fan of all the cards and things like that. There, just it's the game is very approachable for me at the moment, and I've been enjoying it and love the models.
How many Stugs are in your army these days, Warren? How many? Because you used to be massively into your Stugs.
Officially?
Officially.
In this army that I'm doing, there are zero Stugs.
I am surprised.
And that's exactly why I did it.
Yeah.
Because you and half the planet of war gamers are now surprised. You're all going, what? No stooks.
I'm going to have to remake your new coffee picture.
I'd said in the vlog actually on Wednesday, I deliberately stayed away from the stooks. Specifically, just because, you know, that's what people expect. And I thought to myself, no, I'm going to do something different. I have my tool of choice. I have two main tools of choice. I have three main tools of choice.
Let's go back out and come in again.
I have three main tools of choice. This is why I'm loving this so much, right? I have three main tools of choice, right? One is I love infantry in Flames of War. Because they piss your opponent off like nothing else.
Yeah, massively. They can be annoying. Massively.
Infantry used effectively in Flames of War is absolutely brilliant. A, you can frustrate your opponent, or B, as happened to me during a game during the Flames of War weekend, where Laughing Boy, where Martin used his infantry to great effect to hop between buildings, a tactic that I hadn't quite anticipated. But he had them like orangutans jumping from building to building, and before I knew it, he had me completely overrun. Blutered me completely, Justin.
Right.
Okay? Like, he caught me with a tactic, and it was one of those ones that I didn't see it coming. Mm-hmm. Until the point, he hadn't killed anything by this stage, but I realized, oh, sugar.
So he had just set you up for purest pain.
It's too late. I don't know what I can do to counter this. Yeah. It was a beautiful piece of play. And it was beautiful. The way the game executed it was just great. Mm. So infantry.
Yeah.
I just like infantry in Flames. Tool number one. Tool number two. Mm-hmm. 88s.
The artillery?
88s. Yeah. Static 88s. I like static 88s because basically I have four of them, and it's basically like putting four tigers on the table, and you just know that regardless of what they do, your opponent will never, ever be able to take their eye off those 88s.
No. Yep, area denial as well.
It's the shiny thing. Any opponent you play is going to look at the 88s and think, I know what I'm doing with them. I don't know what I'm doing with them, but they will get preoccupied with that, so I can work with other stuff that I don't know what I'm doing with. So,
yeah, it's getting rid of ants using a sledgehammer.
I love the 88s.
You're not removing them.
And then finally, the centerpiece of this army is the Panzer IV.
Ah, so it's not the big cats. No panthers, no tigers?
No, no panthers, no tigers. I have a king tiger somewhere, but Jerry tells me I'm not allowed to use it.
Allowed.
I can't
to
use
be
it.
Fair, actually, I don't know if it's in. No, it's not in there. The Panzer Lair, and we did talk about that.
Yes.
They did get, I think, three king tigers, but they were the early versions of the King Tigers, and they were very prone to mechanical breakdown and just being generally terrible. But they were one of the first units to receive their delivery of King Tigers. So, you know, maybe at some point you may get a mechanically unreliable King Tiger.
It doesn't matter, because the Panzer IV is a beautiful looking.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
I'm a real fan of the Panzer IV. Obviously, not as much as the Stug, but I'm going to come back to the Stugs later in the war when I can put my tank riders and stuff like that on it.
I see.
So for the moment, that's Warren's Holy Trinity. Are the tank riders in there?
Oh yeah, it's a little pointy upgrade for tank riders.
And now he's thinking Stug.
We've already put your stuff aside for what you're using.
It went from a shamrock Holy Trinity to a four leaf clover.
Yeah,
the Stugs are coming back.
Nice.
So yeah, it's just so much hobby goodness right now. It really is. So Flames of War live launch this weekend. Well, we've added to it. So yeah, there you go. Yeah. Guys, let's have a look at the news. Ben, what is going on in the world, my man?
Cool. So the first stuff we're going to be looking at is for a Games Workshop for Age of Sigmar. And the first bit of news that came out over the little weekend, last weekend, was that this weekend we're going to see the return of Gotrek Gunnarsson, or Gotrek Gunnarsson, however you want to say his name, returning to the Mortal Realms on the tabletop with a new miniature.
Yes.
Now, looks very cool. Very nice miniature, but he's missing a few things. He hasn't got his nose ring and his chain, which was, you know, symbolic. He hasn't got his eye patch because it got torn out. I don't know why. And also, he's missing Felix because obviously things happened in the end times, all that kind of thing. And, you know, the scion of Grimnir himself couldn't really take his human with him into the new world, as it were. But it'll be very interesting to see how he plays out on the tabletop nowadays. Hopefully we're going to see a little bit of a war scroll and everything for him, and we'll get some good stuff for him joining all the forces of order as they go slaying monsters and all sorts of things like that. And as well as the miniature, there's also some news to come in terms of the novels and the stories of Gotrek as he's wandering around the Mortal Realms as well. So as well as Realm Slayer, which is the one that was done by voiced by Brian Blessed, that we talked about a couple of months ago.
Fantastic.
Yeah. We've also got a new book, which is called Ghoul Slayer, where Gotrek goes off with his new friend, his new companion, Malaneth, who is an elf assassin, and they go hunting in the realm of Saish to try and find the king of the undead himself, Nagash. And obviously, Gotrek is very, very angry with him for many, many reasons. So, yeah, Gotrek
why is Gotrek angry at Nagash? Why would anybody be angry at Nagash?
Because
Nagash saved Warhammer Fantasy, for goodness sake.
Gotrek is still...
I'm only triggering you guys. Calm down. Calm down.
Gotrek is still the best worst dwarf slayer in the entire universe.
The best worst dwarf slayer?
Yeah.
Troll slayer.
I haven't read all of the final two-parter story that came out sort of towards the end of the end times, but spoilers obviously for everyone who has read it. But Gotrek and Felix go off into the Chaos Waste to try and, you know, hold back the tide of chaos and all that kind of thing. And it comes down to a fight between Gotrek, who slays Belakor and stops him from ascending to godhood. But then it's revealed that Grimnir himself, you know, off there in the void, has been putting all these challenges forward in front of Gotrek so that he can now assume the mantle of this ancestor god for the dwarves. And so Gotrek goes off into the darkness to fight demons practically forever, while Felix is left, unfortunately, to bite the dust, as with everyone else. We imagine so anyway. But in the new book, or the new audiobook anyway, from Games Workshop and Black Library, which was voiced by Brian Blessing, I'm going to say that again, which is very, very cool. he learns about the Stormcast Eternals. And so he learns that maybe Felix is alive out there somewhere, reincarnated as a Stormcast Eternal. So we'll have to see where the story goes. It'll be nice for him to come back. Obviously, I don't imagine he's going to be coming back in his stripy trousers as he was before, but yeah, it'll be very, very
stripy
cool.
Stripy gold armor instead. But it
sounds, sounds like it, yeah. But yeah, it's really cool to see a new model. So, yeah.
I assume he's just looking great for Felix because he wants his axe back.
What do you think of the model? I love it.
I think it's the design of this.
I don't mind it at all, except it could have any other name on it and it wouldn't make a difference.
But it's him.
It's not him.
It is him.
He doesn't have his axe. He's got two eyes.
Yeah.
Did he grow one back?
Well, you don't know if he has two eyes. Have we got a close-up of his face? Scroll down there.
There is pictures from the front of the book where he does have two eyes.
Yeah, so he's got he's got his eye back, he doesn't have his axe, and he's missing his human. Uh-huh. That could be any ginger lunatic at all. Go to Glasgow on a Saturday night and you'll meet three of these guys. You know.
There's no more gaming cons in Glasgow.
Oh, God, yeah. Plenty of them.
He is now carrying around a new ancestral weapon, which is called Zangrom Thraz, which is the axe that he has there. But obviously, it's not the axe that was presumed to be the twin of Grimnir's axe back in the world.
Do you know what? I'm not adverse to a reimagining. You know, it'll be interesting to see. It gives him a new story to tell, Jerry, because otherwise it just tells
the story of where he got his eyeball back from.
Yeah. Yeah, we could. Do you know what? They could do like a Han Solo movie.
That'd
kind of
good.
Thing. Where did Gotrek got his find his stuff?
Where did he find his stuff?
Okay, where's my axe?
Next up, we have the Monsters and Mercenaries for Warcry. Yes, Warcry is only just out, and we already have new stuff for it.
Yeah, so we talked about it a little bit last week, but now it came out a lot sooner than everyone thought it would, you know. But Monsters and Mercenaries is the new expansion that's coming out for pre-order this weekend. So you've had to get it next weekend to use in your Games of Warcry. And this is a new book that includes a whole bunch of new rules in there for including monsters in your warband, for doing little sort of troll hunts where you go off to try and hunt down creatures like the Chimera and the dragons and all that kind of thing. And then also you'll be able to add heroes into the mix as well, a little bit like what you had to do with Kill Team and the Elites and stuff like that that they did with those expansions for that in Warhammer 40,000. As well as the expansion book itself, they've also got a couple of more sort of like box sets coming out. So there's a repackaged Chimera, which will come with the rules for using it in Warcry, which is very cool. Mm-hmm. And there's also going to be proper boxes for the Iron Golems and the Untamed as well. So if you like the idea of playing as those guys, but you didn't pick up the starter set, you can now buy them separately, which is an option there too. And of course, there's some new terrain as well, because you need more terrain to play these.
Is the terrain a repack?
It
looks new to me.
I'm not entirely sure. I think the terrain is new, but obviously it comes with like a board underneath it as well, which is... Yeah.
These terrain packs for Warcry are fantastic. Yeah, I've got to say.
There's also a bunch of cards in there as well for you to use to sort of randomize the deployment and that kind of thing as well. Mm-hmm.
Clearly, Workshop are committed to this Warcry game, I'm really glad to see it, because I think it's probably the best game they have at the moment. Mm. Mechanically speaking, and how it works for an organized play system, it's very, very tight. Yeah. Very tight. I like that. Right. The big news, though, this week is Aeronautica Imperialis has landed. Justin, do you want to whip out your box?
Oh, dude.
Get that box out, man.
Okay,
so see this.
This is the one that you guys could win this week, but we're going to take a little bit of a peeky poo inside.
Yeah, we're not going to poo in it. We're just going to look in it. All right? Do not worry.
I've never heard anyone.
No element of Justin will be in that box. It will be completely clean and spotless. Dear me.
I envy your distance, Ben.
Gary, open the box up there.
It's in the box. It's Gwyneth Paltrow's
head. So, Justin,
head.
What can you tell us about Aeronautica?
If you give me 1 second.
I'll fill you in the time being. So, it's aircraft combat in the 41st millennium, and it's not a repackage, not a reprint of the Forge World one. It has a new system behind it that's similar. So, it's hex map based. So, you can see here things like your movement diagrams.
Yeah.
So, you have a set of orcs against a set of Imperial Guard, well, Imperial Navy, actually. And they're, here we have the actual instruction booklet. So you've got the Dakajet, Fighter Bomber, Thunderbolt, and Marauder. And these are on Rinsworld, which is famous for the orcs overran it so badly that the Crimson Fists, who were on Rinsworld, got shooed almost to the point of extinction. Mm-hmm. So Rinsworld has been kicking around in the storyline for 40K for years. The very first scenario in Rogue Trader was on Rinsworld. It was the battle for the farm.
Right.
So this is a world that's steeped with 40K lore.
Yeah.
And this is where they've returned to bring us this Adeptus Titanicus tangential game. It's mm-hmm. same scale but different system. So you get things like your hex map. Now this is a paper map, which you mm-hmm. may be able to see there. Yeah, you can see the sort of grid lines and that sort of thing on. Mm-hmm. I believe there are
there's card
maps.
There are card
stuff
maps
that there people can upgrade.
Yeah,
you get a very nice.
That's just a nice little divider. They always end of the boxes these days.
That is quite cute, actually.
Yeah.
Look, there's fighter bombers up against.
Do you know what I like about that? It reminds me of an LP.
Yeah,
Looking at that, and I'm thinking that's an LP, man. I'm missing the days. Yeah,
you know,
check out these on the back, though.
So these are the models that we'll get in here. So your Imperial Navy bomber and Thunderbolt fighters,
mm-hmm.
and then the Dakajets and fighter bombers for the orcs for the warg.
Now the proof is in the pudding here, guys. What are the models like?
They are the best bubble wrap, and I really want to punch this, but I know I can't.
it's the unpoppable bubble wrap.
Whoever wins this, we will spray this red for you.
Oh, tension wrap.
So you can use it.
Yeah,
the models are absolutely fabulous in this set. The details are super crisp.
Do that.
Look at that.
They really are sharp. Sharp is a sharp thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, sitting beside your Adeptus Titanicus stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This stuff's just going to look amazing.
I'm looking at this and I'm thinking with the new contrast paints out,
mm-hmm.
These models are just going to look gorgeous with just a little touch of contrast work and then some details picked out.
You think so, yeah?
I think definitely so.
I mean, those orc ones look particularly nice. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen them, maybe that one over there. Just the detail on the engine blocks. Yeah. It wouldn't go amiss on something that was substantially larger.
Yeah.
Now, for the actual game system for the game, it's actually an I go, you go system.
Okay, so what does that mean?
So basically, we'll roll for the initiative at the beginning of the turn, right? Mm-hmm. And if I win, I can decide to go first myself or force you to go first in the turn. Mm-hmm. So that means during the movement step, whoever's going first activates a unit, does their stuff with it, and then it transfers to the other person. So there's a nice back and forth of trying to outguess your opponent and actually trying
to... So it's not a case of I move all my planes, fire all my planes. Okay, yeah.
Exactly. And that works so well for aerial combat games because you're always trying to outthink and outsmart your opponent, trying to move into a line of fire where you think they're going to move into.
Well, an aerial combat game has to be based around its movement. You know, movement has to be a core...
Mm-hmm. And it really is for this, especially with the movement sheets, because as you can see on that, if you pass me one of those, Jerry, I'll quickly show everyone. So it's just one of those sheets down the bottom. Mm-hmm. There is a preset.
All right, one of those.
Separate ace maneuvers, is it?
Movement you can do. And depending on your aircraft, you can do either 1 through 4, 1 through 6, 1 through 8. So not all aircraft are created equal, and it's very easy to see the different movements.
So the more agile your aircraft, the more of those maneuvers that you can make.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, there's obviously the trade-off on that. If you're a big, heavy Marauder bomber, mm-hmm. you're going to be able to take a bit more punishment. If someone's got flanking fire on you, you can fire back with like a turret weapon. Mm-hmm. So there is nice attack and counter-attack things happening, and there's a specific phase of the game before your movement where if you're flanking someone, you get a bonus round of shooting, a sort of a reward for being able to actually get into that good position.
That's interesting, yeah.
You know, so I really like that as well. Then the way the weapons are actually working, they've engineered in all your elevation, all your speed changes. So if you're climbing, you're going to be slowing down. If you're diving, you're going to be speeding up. You speed up too much, your airframe's going to start ripping apart.
Really?
Yep. If you climb too hard, your engine's going to stall out. You're going to start spinning and falling towards the ground trying to recover yourself.
Holy smokes.
And if I'm on a lower level trying to shoot up at you, I'm going to be taking penalties for that. It's just really well designed, the engineering that's went into this.
I was going to say, one of the things that I'd heard about this, and it's good to have it sort of like reassuringly said by you there, Justin, is that a lot of people worried that this was going to be like a really dumbed down version of the original, but it sounds like they've actually put a lot of depth into those mechanics to make sure that it feels like a little bit more like the original game. It's obviously never going to be like replicated perfectly, but it sounds like a very cool sort of change up for the new version of it.
Yeah, and it allows us to explore one of my favorite parts of Imperial Combat, which I've only seen one novel for, which is Double Eagle, mm-hmm. which follows an air war, Imperial versus Chaos, just fighting against each other. And I believe they've re-released the book. It's by Dan Abnett.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun.
It's a surprise. He doesn't do much. Dan Abnett actually writes our scripts. He wrote that.
It's a completely non-forced statement. I like Dan Abnett's work. But no, it's nice. And I'm excited to see if they'll expand this into the other races as well. So actually seeing Chaos Fighters, seeing Tau aircraft, seeing Eldar aircraft, I think it'd be very, very cool to add to this and make what could be also a very good competitive play game for tournaments and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Are you excited?
Very much so.
You seem like an excited puppy on this one.
I am. And I'm a little... I want to grab the core set.
Yeah.
But I know John also wants to play Imperial. So I need to find an orc player. Ryan, would you like to be an orc player?
I'm actually interested in this. So I think aerial combat is cool. Like, I'm surprised any miniature game that manages to get to catch my interest and like, okay, maybe there's something to this. And the mechanics do look pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. What's your preference just looks-wise? Is it going to be
he doesn't care because one of yous will be building and painting them.
Yeah, precisely. If you let me sprinkle glitter on it.
If you take the orcs, go nuts.
Yeah, they're going to be glitterful orcs.
Flash gets.
Flash gets.
That'll be the bad ones.
Yeah,
so that's your law. Aeronautica is now landed. It's available.
Oh, bad time.
Go and if you're interested, go and grab a copy. It's cool looking models, man. It is cool looking models. Right, Steamforged, Ben. They've announced a new team and captains.
Yeah, so I believe it was during Nova last week, the guys over at Steamforged Games announced a bunch of the stuff that's going to be happening for Guild Ball, which continues to be a big, very popular game out there in the world. And so the first of the lesser guilds that they've announced was for the Shepherds, which is a lovely looking guild here, which I'm just always drawn to the characters they put forth for Guild War.
Yeah.
I'm ambivalent to the game. I think it's okay. It's eh. But I really, really like the models they do for it. And I think these shepherds look absolutely fantastic. They're led by, as you might imagine, Shearer. Not the Alan variety, although no. The pose would say otherwise, mm-hmm. Which is very cool. It's just celebration from back in the day, if you liked 90s football. But yeah, there you go. And as well as that, you've got a whole bunch of other team members there shown off in the artwork, as well as the really awesome-looking massive ram. I have no idea how that's going to work in a game of Guild Ball, but it looks absolutely very, very cool indeed. And this was then joined in with a bunch of new sort of captains to throw into the mix as well. So you've got ones for the Alchemist Guild. You've got Soma there, who looks very, very awesome with the sort of fire... alchemical fire burning off him, which I thought was very, very cool. You've got the Farmers Guild Festival, and then you've got Union, who've got a new version of Greed, who is now a veteran version of him. So the story's moved on with him and telling a little bit of a different tale of him, which I thought was very, very cool. So yeah, some awesome stuff coming out of Steamforged for Guild Ball. And one of the interesting things as well when it comes to these models, and a lot of stuff they've been doing lately, is that they're kind of designing these models to not necessarily just be useful for Guild Ball, because a lot of the people that within the Steamforged family, as it were, are very big into their skirmish games and their role-playing games as well. And so they've made a lot of these characters so that they work within the realms of Guild Ball and the sports game itself, but they could also be taken and used as NPCs and characters in role-playing game as well, which I thought was a really, really good idea. Mm. So yeah, some really good stuff to look out for if you're going to be picking up Guild Ball stuff over the next couple of months.
Would that be why the poses are a little more generic and a little less sporty then?
That might be the case. We've definitely seen that with some of the other characters they've done recently. They do like a lot of different versions of the same character that either sort of grown up and changed, and they've done them less in sort of like the I'm kicking a ball pose and yeah. more in sort of action-y pose or like a more sort of like stoic pose instead. So yeah, it's cool.
Yeah,
I'm guessing you like the heroic snapshots.
Well, no, I do. You know what? I can understand why they did it. You know, it's I just
it's one of those ones where even if you don't play the game, when you see the model, you go, "That's for a fantasy sporting game."
Yeah.
Now, if you see it, you go, "He looks like an innkeeper."
Yes.
He could be any innkeeper.
Well, he's an innkeeper from Shepherd's Bush.
Yeah. Pebble Mill, live at one.
Dan Abnett, thank you for that one. Yeah. Okay, moving on. Wargames Atlantic have put up a sci-fi preview. They have some sci-fi hard plastic sets.
You'll like this.
That I'm looking. Oh, I love it.
It's not just Napoleonics, which you love.
Le Grognards.
But it's Le Grognards. Huh? See what they did there? Clever people.
Oh, fantastic. Napoleonic 40K.
Pretty much, yeah.
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 Well, we've been there and we've done that.
So, yeah. So, you know, it's, yeah. So, following hot in the heels of our own fantastic Prussonians.
Yes.
Le Grognards, you may notice there's three different styles of hat. So, they have the French Foreign Legion kepi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have the sort of the bearskin shako of mm-hmm. the Napoleonic era, and then you have the First World War steel helm. Mm-hmm. But every head is also variant. So, you've got gas mask or bare face, depending on what style you want.
It has to be the bearskin.
Yeah, for me, I think
it
so.
It has to be the bearskin.
If you're going to go that way.
That is basically Napoleon's elite guard it's staring at you.
Steel
right
guard
there.
Marching forward.
I just love it. I absolutely.
I love the fact that they've given you multiple options anyway. If you are going to go for the sort of the First World War version, it wouldn't be quite as elaborate. Mm-hmm. And I think the kepi, the Foreign Legion, could do with being sort of toned down or more into the, you know, the beau geste.
Yeah.
That TV show's going
for
back
me, right. There is only one option to choose. On
I don't know. I kind of like the World War One look with that gas mask.
But then you could have your Napoleonic one with the gas mask, because they've done all the heads with it. Why would you not?
I think that if you go for the sort of like the World War One, World War Two theme, you've kind of already seen that done. I think it'd be nice to have them so they look very, very different. A bit like the stuff you would have got from the Praetorians and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Is there any other pictures or is that the only one?
That's the only coloured one. They did a few renders, which I'll try and track down and throw to Ben so we can put them in the show notes. But But so far that's what they snuck in there, and they just went, oh, by the way, we've done this, because we were all waiting for Dark Age Irish.
Yes.
They went, yeah.
Oh, look. These should be coming. I was going to say these should be coming out. I think it's later this autumn. So you've got too long to wait. And there's going to be the same amount of models in the kit as you would have got with the, I think, what they're called,
Ram Jaeger.
So there'll be 24 models in the kit, and they'll have all the weapon options stuff. Because you can see they've got like flamers and grenade launchers.
I really want some of these.
I love it a bit. At the moment, they are talking about possibly doing their own sort of game in the future, but at the moment I think most people are looking at them as alternatives for other games.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think the phrase they used was Grandma Wendy produces a game.
Yes.
that these may be very good for. I'm going, yes, she does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Grandma Wendy does, you know, a fantastic
game. Absolutely. I can totally see these guys. Do you know what I would match them up with? If I were going to match that up with some GW stuff, I think they'd look awesome with the Taurox, those guys there, and get the Tempestus kits.
Obviously with the wheels on it, not the tracks.
The Taurox is far better.
Yeah, you can get an upgrade kit for the it's an Empress or somebody who does that.
I think it was Anvil Industries.
Somebody does wheels for the Taurox to take the tracks off. I'm not actually averse to the tracks. I like the tracks.
I know you're not, but you know, you're wrong.
No. According to a recent live poll that we conducted, I was right.
Of three responders.
Well, there were nobody that agreed with you, my man.
Because we all knew I was right. Didn't feel they needed
tracks on the Taurox.
So I assume Warren created three Smurf accounts just for that.
It was all live. Everybody saw that it was fair and it was
fair and balanced.
Completely fair and balanced. So it was. Okay, next up we have Diplomats and Monsters for Carnivale.
Yeah, so TT Combat was doing a lot of terrain recently. I think we talked about it a little bit in the past. They've been doing some fantastic sort of modular stuff that you can use for the likes of Warcry and that kind of thing. They did some more stuff with Necromunda, but they've moved on now to go back to the world of Carnivale and produce some more miniatures for a couple of different factions there. So the first of these is the Foreign Dignitary set, which is for the patricians that you see there. So this is a set of alternative nobles and merchants that you can bring into your game. So you've got an Englishman there, a Frenchman, you've got two merchants, and there's also the Venetian spy who may or may not be on your side, hopefully she is, who has the long rifle in her possession, which is one of the most deadly weapons in the world in the game of Carnivale. So that's some pretty cool stuff there. And then on the other side of things, we've got the doctors of the Ospedale, who have some more of their weird creatures where they've taken things like massive crocodiles and rhinos and all sorts of things like that, and then added weird bits of tech and stuff into them to make them sort of obedient and sort of use them as a weapon of war against your opponents. So you've got some really cool options there too, which is very, very cool. They also said that some of the additional stuff you've got there for the doctors, in terms of the sort of handlers they've got there, were ones that they show off on sketches quite a way back on, I think it was the Kickstarter for this, but they've now finally made it to the tabletop in a really awesome way there, as you can see. So yeah, if you're really liking the idea of Carnivale, you've got some other options there to sort of add to your warbands.
Well, if they're hoping to prevent the extinction of the white rhino, that's not the way to go about it.
It is because now the rhino can really screw up them poachers.
Fair point.
Yeah.
Right, next up we have Black Seas from Warlord Games. I saw some test shots of these recently. They are looking nice. So this is a 1/700 scale ship-to-ship battle game set during the Age of Sail. Ben?
So yeah, this is a new set that is now for pre-order this week. It starts off with the Master and Commander set, which will give you everything you need to play. So you've got the rule book in there, you've got all the accessories and all the cards and all the widgets and terrain that you need. There's a board that allows you to play out sort of like a fight in the sea. And you also have enough ships to field both a British and a French naval force as well. So I think you've got a bunch of frigates in there and then some brigs too. And they can be sort of split between the two different nations in order for you to make up the different forces that you need. As well as that, they've also got, as you might imagine, with anything that comes from Warlord Games in the pre-order phase, they've got a limited edition version of the rulebook, which comes like a sort of faux leather looking thing, which looks very, very cool. And it comes with a special 28mm miniature as well, which is cool. I think it's called the Sea Wolf, I think its name is, which is sort of a character you could use in your games, Black Powder, if you wanted to. And as well as that, they've also got a whole bunch of stuff on there when it comes to pre-orders, looking towards what's coming next as well. So as well as the Master and Commander set that starts things off, there's also going to be some starter fleets for both the British and the French. And there's also going to be some iconic ships as well. So for the British, you've got the HMS Victory, which is a very cool one that you may know from the Battle of Trafalgar. And then you've also got for the French, L'Orient, which is from the Battle of the Nile, which I read from some guy on the internet, spectacularly blew up within the battle, which is one of its claims to fame, when all the munitions blew up on the ship. So yeah, very, very cool stuff.
Fantastic.
I'm a little bit disappointed that the Seawolf isn't based on Russell Crowe in the film Master and Commander.
Yeah.
Because they already do a Unleash Hell Russell Crowe from Gladiator.
Yeah.
This could have been a 2-for-2 from Warlord.
It's interesting. I've often wanted to get into the Age of Sail stuff. Mm-hmm. Trafalgar is a fascinating battle for me. It's something that I've only recently started to swat up on. I've moved on from Waterloo, mm-hmm. and have started to try and get more in depth into Trafalgar to try and understand.
Dipping
what
your toes
there.
Into naval gaming.
Mm. Well, it's simply a case of.
Calm down, Ryan.
Nelson.
Yes.
I was running through about 50 different names there, including Wellington, Napoleon. No, it was neither of them. It was Nelson, yes. It was... the tactic... For someone to end up on a column in the middle of London, right, a 100-foot column in the middle of London, surrounded by four lions, one of which I have ridden.
Nice.
I remember that night vaguely.
That's why they can't go back to the zoo.
But to be on a 100-foot column surrounded by four giant lions, man, you need to have done some shit in your life. So, to have that level of accolade bestowed upon you.
He even made it to Dublin.
Huh?
There was Nelson's Column in Dublin up until the 70s.
Oh, that was the one that was blown up, was it?
Yeah. So it wasn't just that they only put him in the capital in England.
Yeah.
He made it to other capitals in the empire.
Look what we've done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're amazing.
I can't think of anybody else that ended up on a 100-foot column in the middle of Trafalgar Square.
Yeah, anywhere.
So it got me interested, and then I watched it. Well, do you know what? We'll talk more about it in the future, maybe in conjunction with the Black Sea stuff. Mm. But it is a fascinating period, and as battles go, it was utterly decisive, quite like the Spanish Armada battle. Mm. That level of decisiveness, there was it was that battle. Was, I believe, what basically opened up the British Empire. It built off the back of that, the fact that Britannia ruled the seas from that point on.
See, I'm just always amazed at the skill it would have taken back then to actually just man a warship. You have no propellers, no powered engines. You are just catching the wind and trying to get yourself into position to fight.
I think you get to use sails to do it, though.
That's what I said.
Yeah, you don't have to use your hands to catch that wind, Justin.
You have to flap on the sides.
We had a look at this in the playtest phase at Salute this year, and it looked like a fascinating game that scaled. It's not just a reskin of Cruel Seas, because obviously they've rescaled it as well, and then had to introduce the sail to that. So it looks like a fascinating. It should be fairly easy to pick up, because sometimes naval games, because the Age of Sail is so complicated, you're not using motorized propulsion. So getting it to work in a realistic manner without bogging it down in so much detail, that's the trick. And they seem to do quite well with the playtest version of Salute. Now, that was 3-4 months ago. So I'd be interested to see where they've gone from there.
I was going to say, one of the interesting things as well that was brought up in one of the comments is that it seems like there's a plethora of options for you now if you like this kind of era and this kind of game. So I think it was Turbocooler who said that you've got obviously this Black Seas now coming from Warlord. You've also got Oak and Iron, which was done by Firelock.
That's right.
And there's also Sails of Glory, which is like the one that everyone knows by Ares as well.
Yeah.
So you've got lots of different options when it comes to this now. Mm-hmm. It's good.
Okay, final bit of news. This is an interesting one. I saw this at UK Games Expo, but Deep Cut have created a gaming table. Okay, so this is their gaming table. It's a lovely piece of modern art when you
it's
look
at it. It's quite IKEA.
The beauty of this is €490 mm-hmm. for this gaming table. Now, that, as gaming tables go, because whenever I walk around UK Games Expo, the gaming tables are all like £2,000 or £3,000. So this one here, the top comes off, and then you slide the top into the sides, mm-hmm. and then it becomes like an area where you can put your books and your gaming stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's an inserted bit down into the gaming table.
I scroll up, you can see it.
Yeah. So it's it's a plywood thing that's veneered, and it comes in a white or a black.
I quite like the black, I will say.
Yeah?
You always have to have a black version for the war games. We love our black t-shirts.
We
black
love our black.
Also, it would match all my furniture.
Yeah. It's nice. I got to play with it at UK Games Expo, and I did think, this is nice. This is very nice.
Yeah, it's one of the interesting things seeing this when it came up in the news this week. Like, I hadn't actually heard about it apart from when I saw it this week and had a quick peek at it and sort of had a look at some of the images of how they were presenting it with all the miniatures and that kind of thing. And for the price of it, I think it's pretty all right. You know, yeah, as you say, there's a lot of big gaming tables out there from Geek and some of the like, which cost you thousands of pounds.
A mortgage, man. They cost you a mortgage.
It's a bit of bling to have one of these in your house. But I think if you really want to have somewhere which is dedicated gaming space, it's not a bad idea, really. So.
Well, the thing about this is, gaming has become an open part of many people's identity now. Mm-hmm. You know, so not all of us have big fancy places where we can have
a dedicated
gaming space or whatever. Mm-hmm. So to have something that could function as a dining room table, mm-hmm. you know, or a breakfast table or whatever in your kitchen, and then you can
leave set up,
fold it out, and you can do your D&D or whatever in it.
But it's also, let's say you get like halfway through a board game and it's just like, crap, we need to take a break, we can come back to this another night. It means you can actually still have the table function without having to pack away your game and remember where the hell everything was.
Yeah
What weakling goes to sleep when there's a board game still to play?
People who are married.
People who are married, yes. Yeah, I would go to sleep. Right, that's your lot. Right, we have three Kickstarters, Ben, that we want to have a look at this week. What are we kicking off with?
So the first of these is for the Cordran Conflict, which we had a little bit of a sort of look at previously on a weekend. And we also had a gameplay video out for it this week as well, where Justin sat down to talk a bit play through the game as well. So I'll let him talk about the gameplay element of it. But the Kickstarter itself comes from Plastic Alchemy, who are doing something that we've not really seen done before, where they are creating an entire game that you can 3D print yourself. So you can just get all of the STL files for everything you need here and then get it to the tabletop and play the game yourself, printing it off in a very sort of substantial way. I think it's done with not a lot of sort of outlay of cost from your end as well, apart from obviously having a 3D printer, but it sounds very, very good from what they've put forward in the campaign anyway. So you can make all the miniatures and all the sort of components and all that kind of thing that you put down on the tabletop in a modular fashion and all that kind of thing as well. You can also pledge in order to get this in sort of like a pre-printed sort of package as well. So if you don't have a 3D printer, you can get it that way too, which is very cool. But it's nice to see more companies going out there and sort of using the 3D printers in order to basically deliver us an entire game in one go, which I thought was a really cool idea. So this is a new one from Plastic Alchemy, Cordran Conflict.
Justin, you got a chance to play this, didn't you?
I have.
Let's Plays going on.
I have not only played it, but while we had the guy over here from Plastic Alchemy.
Josh,
we actually set up one of our own in-house 3D printers, mm-hmm. which he had never seen before that day, had no idea about the required settings.
You sprung it on him, yeah?
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things with 3D printing. The guys are working really hard to make sure that no matter which brand of 3D printer you're running from, mm-hmm. you have the best chance of getting a functional print coming out from what they're giving you from this Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So it was actually, and he even said this to me, it was a huge step and a bit of a ballsy move to actually set that up and film us going from here's the setup, here's the settings, we're going to print out one of these miniatures from this from scratch. Mm-hmm. And so we have a video of that. Hopefully should be going out in the near future.
Wow. Okay, cool. So,
but what we also have in this, which I really like, is you have all the options for 3D printing. So if you want to do something super simple, you can just do the fast print pawns.
Yes.
So what they're for is if you just want to get up, running, playing, learning the game, and then each unit has a unit type. So this symbol I'm pointing at here, it's just printed on the top of the fast play token.
Uh-huh.
You can do it via FDM.
Oh, the fast print pawns. That's that blue thing at the bottom end.
Yes. Right. Okay. So it's got the unit type symbol on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then you have the FDM
two-part. The FDM two-part assembly, which the guys do recommend you do two colors because it just it looks nicer if you don't want to have to actually start priming, painting, stuff like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then you've got the resin miniatures, which are, if you've got a resin bath, they do a full miniature as well as the split two-part.
Right.
So like I said, these guys are not doing half measures. They are going as good as they can to make sure you can get a print out and get the game functioning.
See, what I'm enjoying about this is the potential that this offers, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's the I like the idea of almost subscribing to a war game, mm-hmm. right? And that war game expanding as we go, mm-hmm. and then all I have to do is just opt print what I want. Yeah, I'm printing it out, mm-hmm. and I'm playing with it.
This was something that I actually said to Jerry about earlier on. It's an interesting, because usually when you go on a Kickstarter, you buy a board game, you are paying for a company to print this game and send it to you. Whereas this, you are paying for the right to print it yourself, and you can print it as many times as you want. And it's interesting seeing that, like, the base cost for this is like £29, I think, for UK. And that's really interesting. Like, you print this as many times as you want and do what you would like with those printed out copies. It brings a new, interesting economic dynamic to the tabletop, because it's one of the first times 3D printed games have come to Kickstarter. So it's very interesting. You're paying for the right to the STL. That's cool. Yeah,
but you're also not having to worry about losing components from your board game. Mm-hmm. Oh, I lost that tile for the game board. I'll just reprint one. Mm-hmm. And they are doing sort of a hybrid thing with this as well, because you do have the option to get some physical assets like your game board, your cards, things like that. And then you can take your time, so print out those fast play tokens to begin with, and then start printing all the additional components around it.
Yeah.
So you're not just going, I have to be good at 3D printing. There is a chance to step up.
But think about this. Think about where this is headed, right? Mm-hmm. Wizards of the Coast. They launch a new campaign of some new monsters that you meet down the dungeon. Mm-hmm. You just print them.
Yep.
You just print them, and then you sit and you play with your mates. Games Workshop, right? They release their new Annihilator, Obliterator squad. Mm-hmm. And you look at it and you say, yeah, that suits my meta, I'm going to have that. Mm-hmm. And you just print it.
Yep.
There was a Kickstarter campaign, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, and it was called The Lost Adventures. And their premise was that they were delivering you all of the 3D print files for you to make your heroes, your monsters for every single encounter that you will face during that campaign they laid out. And you had like terrain elements and all that kind of thing. They then sent you things like boards and the books and stuff that you needed. But then everything else you got was just 3D printed at home. And effectively it was an entire, I think it was level 1 through 5 campaign that you got in as a set of 3D printable stuff. So people are doing it in that sense for the role-playing thing. But obviously if a bigger company took it up, as you say, that could be really interesting to see where they go with that.
So also, like, I'm no tree hugger. Mm. Well, that's a lie. I have hugged a tree. I've hugged a tree.
Now, is this to hold you up?
No, that was a lamppost. The tree was because I'd heard that hugging trees make you feel better, so I thought, oh, I'll give a tree a hug, a big old oak. But anyway, so I am a tree hugger, okay? But I do care about the environment to some extent, you know, to some extent. I care about it a lot. I care about it for my future seed that I have spawned into this world, okay? I want them to have a place that was as you know, as well-maintained as I found whenever I was born, to muck it up in their own unique way. But here's the point about this, right? Imagine if, like, a company like Kingdom Death or Games Workshop suddenly didn't have to manufacture anything. They became a design house. And then you just printed it. Yeah. And the PLA, like if they can find a way to continue to improve the resolution and the output of these machines. Mm-hmm. Now, I have seen some 3D printed miniatures recently that were printed on an FDM machine. So one of these just normal ones that print PLA. Yep. And I was astounded by it.
Yeah.
But PLA itself is made from corn. Mm-hmm. So it's a natural product as well. So, you know, I think the environmental impact that this could have on our hobby would be absolutely huge. The transportation costs would go down. Operation costs would go down.
Your carbon footprint drops off.
Yeah, massively. Well, and then the material that you're actually printing with is an organic material as well.
So like in games, like in music, like in books, at what point does war games become...
Digital.
Digital distribution companies.
Yeah.
Now, there is one thing that also happens within the gameplay of this game that I quite like.
Yeah.
You come to the table with your opponent. You don't know what your scenario is until you're at the table, and you don't start building your forces until you've picked your scenario. Mm-hmm. And you're doing this directly across from your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So if tactically you can actually sit and look and sort of plan your strategies as soon as you're there and saying, okay, I know this faction likes to do that. So I have this faction. So what's the best way to actually build from this? So for competitive play, you could have a lot of fun with this.
Well, it is 26 days left to go. Definitely go and check out the Cordron Conflict. It's a very, very interesting project that the guys have put together. Right, next up, we have the relaunch of District 9, the board game.
Yay.
They've went off. They've rethought how they're going to do it. What is different this time around, Ben?
So this is the guys at Weta. They launched a Kickstarter campaign, I think it was about 6 or 7 months ago, and they've taken the time since then sort of go back to the drawing board, work with, I think it was Trishula Entertainment, in order to bring the game back up to a state where they can sort of make sure that the community feels good about what they're getting. So one of the big things they've changed about it, and this was one of the things that they wanted to push forward across everything, is that there is now a sense of asymmetry between the different factions. So one of the big things that a lot of people talked about when the original game came out, and hopefully Ryan and Justin can talk about this a little bit more because they did a Let's Play on it, is that the factions felt like they were too similar. And they kind of just played the same way. They've now made it so the both different factions sort of work completely differently from each other. There are new ways in order to sort of set up the game and start the game where things play out differently. There's also a modular nature to the way the board comes together too. So they've tried to add a lot more sort of replay value into the game at the same time. The sort of basics of it as a whole is that it's a 2-4 player game where you take on different factions within the world of District 9 who are sort of fighting for control of the board and scrap and technology during the final 3 days of the film. And one of the other really cool things about this one as well is that they've gone back to the original model creator who did a lot of stuff for the film and was the inspiration for it, Gary Hunt. And they've taken a lot of his work and reimagined it into a whole bunch of miniatures that you can see hopefully as you're looking through the Kickstarter as well. So it's a sort of really interesting take and hold style game where you've also got a lot of other bits and pieces going in there as well. And also you've got this asymmetry going on there too, which is that sort of new angle they've gone for as well. But yeah, it seems like Weta have listened to a lot of what people have said, built on it, and come back hopefully stronger than ever with this new version of the Kickstarter. So
there we go.
Yeah, cool.
And then finally, we have one last Kickstarter for you. That last one, the District 9, is 18 days left. So there's still a good amount of time there to get involved in that.
As we film this, it is right on the cusp of funding.
There we go. Right. This one is Zontane's Juice Bar. There's only 5 days left to go on this one. It's a micro Kickstarter, so we it's one of the ones we want to show to you guys because it's some really cool stuff.
Yeah, so this is one that Lance is a big fan of, and I believe maybe it was 3 or 4 years ago when we were at Salute, me and Lloyd went over to have a look at these, and Lloyd was absolutely taken by their wonderful sort of reptilian, amphibian, dinosaur-style creatures as well. And this is a little tiny set that has been highly requested by a lot of people that love this game from the world of Twilight. So you get to either own him in metal or in resin, you get to own Zontane and his traveling juice bar that walks around the world of Twilight. And it looks absolutely special and amazing. And I really, really hope that Lance gets a version of this so that he can paint it up because he's done some amazing work on some of the stuff for this range before in the past. But yeah, little tiny Kickstarter. You get the model in 2 different ways. You can also get some additional stuff. So you can get like a wooden display base and like a resin one as well if you really want to. They're also working to unlock some extra stuff so they got stretch goals to get stat cards for him to be used in the game as well, which is a really nice little addition too as well. But yeah, a really nice little snapshot of the world of Twilight. And if you like this, make sure you go and check out more from them, because they truly do have one of the most like original worlds to play around on the tabletop with, and it's well worth checking out in more detail. So
fantastic. Look, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Remember, this week we are giving away a copy of Aeronautica Imperialis to be in with a chance of winning. Just go over to this video on YouTube, post a comment, but more importantly, come across to on tabletop.com and post a comment on this site, and it's worth two entries. Last week we were giving away the D-Day German bundle that was won by LB Lunchbox LB, but go and check the prize center on tabletop.com and you can make your prize claim there. Massive thank you to Justin and Jerry and Ben and Ryan, and most importantly, a huge thank you to all you guys. For any of you guys that are a member of the Cult of Games, if you're one of our cultists, we will see you bright and early tomorrow morning. Take it easy. Have a great weekend.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.